resolution?
Yes. How many pixels?
I think it's 800 wide. No, 800. Let me check. You see?
Okay, welcome to the next talk. I was asked to friendly take over the moderation of the following two talks because Stefan has to do other things upstairs in the Mac pool. But I'm not belonging to the official staff here, just to make it clear. But for this task, I got temporarily the official T-shirt. That's the reason why I'm doing that. Okay, next talk will be visual prototyping of audio applications with David Garcia and Pau Arumi, and not present here, Javier Amatrien, who is in California at the moment, cannot attend here, but I'm sure it will be fine like this.
Hello, thanks for coming. All three, sorry. Tabi, Pau, and me, we are the current core developers of the CLAM framework, and we want to show you some of the latest enhancements we did to the framework, mostly focused on the building of the visual building of prototypes. So we are going to do a very quick introduction, and then we are going to focus very much in a demo. And after that, we want to show some of the details on the architecture that enables that. And then we are going to give some details on the scene pattern on the implementation in the form of the scene patterns. Okay. So the general goal we want to achieve is to improve the audio software development process. We all know that frameworks is something that is very useful for that, because they offer system models for specific domains. So developers instead of using implementation concepts, they use concepts that are more close to the domain. In a step forward, our frameworks offers visual builders that allow to manipulate those domain concepts in a visual way. What about the audio music domain? Well, there's a long history of frameworks and environments. PD, Mac, SuperCollider, Marcias, OpenSoundWall, SoundObject, GStreamer, Jack, Clamp, and for sure I'm missing all of them. They all target on different purposes. But most of them offer some kind of data flow editing tool, okay? So that could be what is the visual builder for those kind of systems. But data flow builders are not enough to build full applications. Why? Because normally applications that you give to a final user needs some specific user interface and some specific user logic, application logic. So, okay, let's start with the first thing. What about user interfaces? Okay, there are a lot of open source toolkits such as Qt, GTK, and Filtic that offer also visual builders for the user interface. Visual builders enables to assemble some components into a layout. Okay, but still we have some problems here. Even when we have something that enables us to prototype the data flow, and something that enables us to prototype the user interface, we still have to do some low-level programming to merge them all. So what is our proposal? Is to define an architecture that enables visual development of full audio application, including those three elements, the processing core, the user interface, and the application logic. So instead of trying to give a solution for all the possible audio applications, we just focused on the ones with a simpler application logic. That is, in your case, we choose real-time synthesizers, analyzers, and effects. The application logic that those applications have is mostly about sending controls to the processing core and visualizing some of the data that lives inside the processing core, starting and stopping, loading files, and so on, and connecting with the audio backend, for example. Those screenshots in here are two examples of applications that are built with our system. Okay, although you can, of course, build those prototypes, we are not just limiting to those. I mean, you can prototype those applications and embed them in a bigger application, or enhance or extending by coding the application logic. Okay, now we are going to do a demo.
So, thank you. I'll be explaining the demo because David will be very busy with prototyping tools. So, we had a nice drawing of what we're going to do. We basically edit the data flow. We're going to edit the user interface and put it all together. Okay. Let's start with the Clam Visual Builder. It's called Network Editor, and it uses the toolkit Qt4. If any of you know Clam, we had the previous version of the Network Editor based on Qt3, but this one is completely rewritten, and it's way more usable and stable. So let's start with a previously done network. This is an example of spectral transformations. Yes, we have. What are you? Yes. as you see here, I know you don't see it because of the Please. Because the Scrooge's cat.
Frightening the kids. Please buy them
Okay, I think we need a loop of the voice here, Nardo. Okay. So if we were able to see all the screen, in the bottom right corner there's a symbol that says that we're using the jack backend, but network editor can also use ALSA backend or port audio or other kinds of backends. Okay, so you're seeing running. There's a first spectral analysis on the top, which basically performs FFT and some windowing. And then we fit a chain of spectral transformations. We have David displaying with a three-band filter. I think we need a little bit of volume. Well, you see that this is an extra effect. It's not sounding very well, but the nice thing here is that these processings transforms spectrum that data types, so it's really easy to program this kind of clamp processings. Okay, you don't have to worry about FFTs and all that because you already use an existing analysis and synthesis processing. Okay, we can show another effect like the robotizer or over a singing voice. You shouldn't down the.
We keep on bulleting our toes, and new charges rely on your aluminium lungs.
Here you are, a simple robotization effect, kind of.
Invisible ceiling.
Okay. These were just examples of spectral processing in the network editor. The next thing we're gonna do is to build another network and then to build an interface on top of it. Okay, this is the audio source that will be mapped to an input jack port, but you can define the number of audio sources you want. It's not restricted to any number. Now we're going to take a song, not a voice as source, because we're going to perform a tonal analysis. Okay, this is the simplest network, just a source and an oscilloscope to see that is feeding audio to the network. So, yeah, this is the tonal analysis thing. It's a complex processing that inside have a composition of a smaller processings. The first input we are gonna, these algorithms of tonal extractions have work of researchers in Queen Mary in London and MDG in Barcelona. And I think it's quite amazing thing. The first output we're gonna monitor with this widget is the tonal correlation, I think. The pitch profile. So we see the energy for each pitch that is feeding to the network. Okay. You have to connect Arduino to the interface. Here all the pitches are organized in a musical and convenient way, so you can easily see the charts that the pitches are drawing, and so on. Okay, now we're gonna add an even more interesting widget that is for... you'll see. Okay, an interesting feature of Clam, by the way, is that the ports are typed, so It's not allowed to connect to this port in the button on the bottom, but you do can connect in the green one, so you have these cues to see if it's the correct type or not. Yes, let's fit it. Can you do it a little bit larger, David? So this processing is analyzing the chord of the music. So you can see that we're moving from C-sharp to E. It also distinguishes the minor and major things. Okay. Of course, the color says a lot about if it's a perfect chord or if it's some strange chord and so on. Okay, so let's say that you want to give this as a closed application to a musician, a guitarist, for example. Then you want to build a simple user interface. Then let's use Qt in conjunction with Network Editor. I mean Qt Designer, the Visual Builder tool of Qt Toolkit. We start with a simple dialog. Okay. We're gonna use three widgets. See here that there's a section in this panel that have CLAM widgets. So we have compiled a plugin of Qt widgets that we can use in the design. David is dropping some of these widgets. See that when you drop a widget, you can have a look of the final look. I mean, there's some data in it, so it's very convenient to know what kind of widget you are using. Okay, Qt let you organize the layout very easily, like you have seen. And now let's go for the binding, no? Or not, editing the styles. Okay, you can tweak the style, like for example the colors. I think David is adding a new, changing the background of the oscilloscope, but you can change a lot of parameters of the CLAM widget. And you could also change the foreground color, for example. Okay, here we are. So it's not a bad, it's a good way to have rapidly have a lot of different applications looking a little bit different. Okay, let's run it. Ah, yes. Of course, there's no binding still. How we do that winding, that binding? We just copy the port identification ID and we paste it in a special property of the widget. It's quite simple. If we do the same for the pitch widget. You see that we're using the outputs of the processing outputs. That means that you don't need those widgets here in the network. You just need the tonal processing. Okay. So let's go for the last one. No, we are already done. Okay. Yeah. Now we have to save the user interface design with the same name as the network definition. Okay. Here we are. And now we're using a Prototyper application to load the interfaces, the audio core, and the interface thread, and to run it all together. Uh-huh. Because it's a Jack application, we need to fit audio in the application. Here we are. Maybe it's not connected to. Notice that this is a completely different application from Network Editor. It's a standalone application. Okay, it has a network player inside, but so you can distribute this as a package, as a closed binary to somebody. Okay, another quick example that show how you can also send controls. Not only visualize data flow data, but also send controls to the clam processings. In this case, we're gonna do an SMS transformation. I think it's a transposition. Yes? Yeah, now we have to insert the application as if it was a plugin. So yeah, master to clam SMS transposition. And we have two outputs, transposed one, zero and one. So we will be able to do like to an harmonizer. Yes, here we are.
We keep on bulleting our toes. And the charges relay your aluminium lens. Invisible ceiling breeze is coming, frightening the kids. Please buy them coach to keep
of course this is
them safe.
We're using jacks, so we can use the live mic.
In a post-nuclear world, we keep on bulleting our toes. Our new chargers rely on your aluminium lungs.
Yeah, the first. Yes. I've been told that better not touch this mic. It's very sensible.
Okay, it should be working.
Yes? Yes? Yes. Sounds like that. Is it working? Is it connected? Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes. I'm a little gnome. Yes. Yes.
There's a little delay here because
I think we're using a large jack buffer. Yeah. Yeah. One, two, three. Not so large. Okay. Well. You see that it's useful for real-time effects. And that's pretty much the demo. Now David is going to stress some things of the architecture.
OK, as you have been seen here, we have three main models, I mean, components on this kind of system. We have on one side, okay, this no, muy punterón, yeah? Okay, you have one part that is the data flow editor, this is the other part that is the user interface editor, there is a third, no. And there is a third, okay. And there is a third element that is the runtime engine, the prototyper in our case, that just merged all together. Also, some of the elements, so we have the data flow editor, and the data flow editor is extendable by adding some plugins, not just clam plugins, but also LASPA plugins. Did we show that?
No, we didn't show.
Okay, so we can also use LASPA in Okay. So on the other side, on the user interface side, we have the Qt Designer, and we have also plugins in there. I mean, the clam plugins we added, the clam widget we added here, but that can be extended in a lot of ways. Then we have the runtime engine. They have the builders that put all together, I mean, that just the builders just constructs the both structures by using XML files that we have saved. As you seen before, we used the properties of the widgets and the properties from the processing just to merge them. Okay, so there is a unit that just inspects those structures and finds for elements that could be suitable of being connected. Then we have the runner that is the one that just launches the threads and the sound system and just put it all together. As you can see, Paul noticed before, we have used Jack backend. We have also PortAudio backend. And we have another kind of backends that are LASP and BST plugin backends. And that can be extended. I mean, we have just abstracted the way we connect that network to a sound system, whatever it is. So the thing is that, for example, we are just currently working on having also the user interface on BST, but we have some problems. I think something is going, we have it, I think, soon, but I don't know exactly when. And here we can see a Clamp network being used as a BST plugin in that's Cubase under Macintosh. Okay. Okay. Now Paul will explain some details on the implementation.
Yes. This architecture is quite general, but we faced several difficult problems in the implementation or in the design level. We would like to mention three of them. The first one is related to the builders. The builders have to instantiate structures of objects, of processing objects and widget objects, and the builders does not know the types of those objects. So how can it's possible? We're using the factory patterns, or should I say C++ idioms, which is very convenient here. Okay, this I think it's an easy problem. The more difficult ones are related to the binder and to the runner. The binder. In Clam, you have seen that the ports are typed. That means that you have a port that is a spectrum couplet, or a port that is a spectral peak couplet in the C++ sense. Okay, this is good in two sense: for efficiency reasons to establish the channels, and it's good for making easy the task of the programmer of a processing. Okay, because the programmer just see a spectrum port and can use the data very easily. Okay, so ports are typed and are not limited in any way. So users can add their own types for the ports. And moreover, the connection manager, which is the network editor and is the prototyper that binds things together, knows nothing about the types. So how do we manage all this? We have we have documented the solution in a pattern called typed connections. And I think that it's very usable in other data flows in the audio domain. The documented version of the whole pattern is in the paper, so it's not enough time to go into it now. And then about the runner, of course, this is a typical problem. How do you communicate the priority audio thread with the user interface thread? And what we are doing is showing data in real time. We use a data structure we call port monitor, which also have documented as a design pattern. A port monitor is a lock-free structure, but is simpler than a normal ring buffer, lock-free ring buffer. Why? It's simpler because we don't mind that the user interface lose some frame, while it keeps up with the last data. Okay, so that's the next one. As I said, we have explanations of the patterns and the solutions in the paper. this would be the other one. Oh, that you can go to the last one. See that this port monitor lock-free structure is as easy as two datas and a flag. So it's very easy to implement. Okay, these two patterns are part of a larger collection. A collection of patterns for data flow, mostly audio-related patterns. Okay, they are documented in a separate article. Okay, so let's draw the conclusions. This architecture is implemented, as you have seen. It comes with the latest release, CLAM 1.0, that is 1 day old, I think, or 2 days old. And it's already packaged for Debian, Ubuntu, Fedora Core, SUSE, and Windows, and Mac. Yeah, probably. What more? Well, you have seen that you can build simple applications in few minutes. So developers can focus just on writing novel components and not the overall application. That relates with the first goal we set in fostering productivity. We are reusing processings. We are using LATSPA plugins, for example, but also we are reusing widgets in form of Qt plugins. And we found that this is very interesting. Maybe other software, audio software, could reuse plugins. I mean widgets plugins, as they already do with processing plugins. And of course, we also try to reuse design experience in patterns. So what's for now future lines is extend the current use cases of visual prototyping to things more complex with more complex controls. We also want to address more complex application workflow, for example, the workflow needed for authoring tools or working with descriptors, databases, batch processing, etc. Another thing we want to improve is how to bind the user interface and data flow. Now we just copy-paste identifiers, but we have seen that there is room for much improved bindings. Okay, and what more? Audio pattern catalog. Yes, we think it's worth it to make the pattern writing thing a community effort. So. Yes, please write patterns. We'd like to see it. And I think that's pretty much all. Thank you, and please ask questions.
Yeah, thank you very much for this very interesting talk, Paul. And are there any questions?
Hi, I do have one question about the network structures of CLAM. You showed that it is possible to create them dynamically. Is it possible to do that dynamically in a low latency system so that it would be possible to create networks on the fly, or is it just for prototyping?
Well, you have seen that we were changing the network, but we had to stop the Jack client for that. So right now we have to stop the flow of the network.
So, I mean, we didn't target that, but I don't feel this that could be very different to very difficult to do. I mean, it's just because we didn't address that. I think we could.
Would be interesting to add this feature, yes.
Further questions from the audience?
There's one thing I would like to mention, is that we are being accepted in the Google Summer of Code program, and today is the last day for application, in theory, but there's a extended deadline for 2 more days. Okay, so you know. So anyone interested in do a project with CLAM and earn money?
Apply there, yeah. Any questions from the internet audience, maybe? Oh, yes.
Yes, Stéphane Letz from France would like to know, what about multiprocessor support?
Nasty question.
Okay. Hello, Stéphane. Where are you? I know he wanted to come to the conference. Well, of course, we can use Jack multiprocessor, so that's how we achieve multiprocessor. I mean, Jack is one single process, one single thread. CLAM is one single thread, but we can use a number of different CLAM applications, so we can combine them using the Jack multi-MP from Stefan. So that's currently the way to achieve multiprocessor.
Okay, any further questions? Oh, just.
Stefan has asked, he means that, what about multiprocessor in CLAM itself? I think that, I take that to mean in a single CLAM application. Maybe just being nasty, I have no idea.
Yes, I think so too. we can do that. No, it's not, I think it's not one of our plans right now to do that.
I think normally, as we show, I mean, the way of connecting professing some of them is just an structure that if we could, in order to introduce some kind of multiprocessor, we should need some kind of communication among threads. And okay, we are, it's something that we have not started now.
Sorry, just a second. Sorry, could you please?
I mean, if you want to, I'm Alejandro from Buenos Aires and live in London. Yeah, if you want developers to write applications on your architecture, you have to convince them to come to you. And when you see the hardware trend of just having multi-cores and multi-processors, right, like apparently that's the way they're gonna go. I mean, you're killing your own future by not supporting that.
Okay, let me answer that. This question is not the number one petition of our users. I would say that is the first time we have that petition, and we have much more features to add that are screaming to go into the CLAM. Of course, it's an open source project, so it's welcome for everyone to hack. But I was talking about the core developers' first interest. Okay. But on the same time, there's some feature line about integrating different data flow systems. So this can bring the possibility of multi-processing or multi-processors in one CLAM network, but I'm not sure about that.
Okay, if there are not any further burning questions, then I would like to thank you again.
Thank you.
And next talk will be Jens Gulden, model-driven software development with SuperCollider and UML, I think in 5 minutes, in a couple of minutes. Okay. Thank you.
Should be visible. Yeah.
Okay, welcome again to the last talk of today. Jens Gulden with his topic Model-Driven Software Development with SuperCollider and UML.
Yes, hello. My name is Jens Gulden. I'm a researcher in computer science here from TU Berlin, and I'm generally working on modeling techniques, models, understanding of models, and how we can efficiently build software systems with modeling techniques. And as one case study for applying such standard in modeling, namely that unified modeling language, which I will briefly introduce during this talk, I have adopted this unified modeling language to the SuperCollider language because I wanted to find out if that whole idea of creating software even works with a non-standard language like the SuperCollider language is. And this is what this presentation is about adopting the unified modeling language to work with SuperCollider and to develop SuperCollider software with it. Yeah, at first I will briefly introduce how software with SuperCollider is developed and how alternative development environments can look like. Then I'll give an idea of what the unified modeling language is. I'll then show how the UML is in concrete adopted to the SuperCollider language and how this bridging is done. And in the end, I'll give some examples, talk about some plans, and give a short conclusion. Yeah, this is one way of typical SuperCollider development environment on Linux. It's Emacs-based. You can see that the SuperCollider audio server is running as a Jack client, and the SuperCollider programming language is accessed from within Emacs. And for example, you can have one sub-window in Emacs showing your application code or your test code, which is a more script-like kind of programming. You use predefined classes and create instances of objects, for example, for testing or running an application. And on the other hand, you write those classes as kind of a class library in an object-oriented approach with different source files. So you keep your classes in alternative source files and build up your own class library for SuperCollider like this. And you can maybe do this, for example, as shown here, with a split window in Emacs if you stick to a completely text-based environment. But what you also can do is keep your Emacs as the main interface to the SuperCollider language for the main application or the testing code, but develop the object-oriented class library in a visual approach with a diagram-based technique. And this is what's indicated in this example screenshot. Yeah, I can probably give an example already. I think we can. This is one particular tool which is available as a UML tool commercially in this case. So unfortunately, this is not a GPL tool, but we'll see later in the future plans that this is one one urgent issue for me to later transfer the whole thing to a free, completely free environment. This is how it looks like. You have the diagram on top. You can zoom into this diagram. You can see a symbol for a class called DomNode here. You have a list of attributes shown, and you have a list of methods that this class provides, and you can, for example, choose one particular method here and access the source code in order to then write the code that makes up the implementation of this method. Yeah, just to give a very brief idea of what this UML is made of, you have this symbol for a class that names the class in the top part, then has a second section for listing the attributes that are associated with the class, and in the bottom you list the methods, as we've already seen in the example. You can also interlink classes, as for example with an inheritance relationship. This would make the class called subclass here inherit all the attributes and methods from the superclass. As we know from the Supercollider language, when creating subclasses from superclasses. And you can also build up relationships between classes, which actually make up variables that point to instances of the corresponding other class. Yeah, and a small model, which could be used for actually developing software, is shown in this example. You have declared an abstract superclass called Musical Element. It's abstract because the convention of the UML says that elements written in italics are to be understood as abstract. So this is also the case with the play method of the abstract superclass Musical Element. And then there are three concrete classes derived from that superclass with their particularly own attributes, and they concretely then implement the play method. Why does it make sense to use such a visual modeling technique for developing software? You can give a number of arguments. I think the two main points are that such an approach provides a much better navigability in the code you're working on compared to plain source files. And even if you're an individual developer who is just working on his own on a system, you can much quicker change between editing one method of one class and then go to a different class, edit another method. You much easier can see relationships between classes, and you can much better figure out how the system is built. Yeah, and especially when you communicate with other people, either in a more commercial, professional context or in an open source process. I think the visual way of expressing how a system is built up can dramatically increase the comprehension of such a system. Because unlike using text files, you can use spatial relationships for describing what the system actually is. That means you can make use of distances, of groupings, of linkings to express what your system is like. And this is something which is non-verbal and can dramatically increase the semantics of such a description of a software system. You probably hear that this is one part of my PhD to explain why the perception and the comprehension of such diagrams is so much better than just using plain text. I just listed a few products because I'm using this Poseidon for UML here in this presentation, and I didn't want to present it just on its own. There are, of course, several alternative products like this Enterprise Architect, which is a commercial thing. Fujaba is completely free, and also Eclipse integrated UML development environment. Poseidon, already shown here. There is an extension to Eclipse called Eclipse UML, which I'd like to try out soon, but haven't done yet. Rational Rose was one of the first commercial products
also created by the inventors of this UML standard, visual paradigm, and many, many more. If you type in UML tool in Google, you will find many more. What's important to understand when you develop software with the UML is that the UML itself is not a programming language. You do not program, you just describe the overall structure of the declarations that make up your software system. So together with that diagrammatic technique, you always have a real programming language, which in the end makes up your software. And that means that the visual relationships and the visual elements that you declare in the diagram will have to be translated to an actual target programming language in order to get runnable software from it. And yeah, in general, you can think of this process like this. You have that diagram. It has its formal elements and relationships given in its visual structure, and you have some piece of software, which is usually part of your visual development environment, that can generate normal classical source files from the model in the target programming language. And now, in order to use the SuperCollider language with the UML, you have to make sure that this code generation process in the end generates SuperCollider and not, for example, Java or C++. Yeah, and it has shown that the SuperCollider language is, in fact, capable of reflecting the elements of an object-oriented software system as they can be described in the UML, and then to make up a piece of SuperCollider software. And you can go through the mappings that are there between the UML and the SuperCollider language. The UML generally provides elements of any object-oriented programming language, and you will find some concrete implementations of these elements in the SuperCollider language too. Like, of course, the idea of a class that is expressed by the rectangular visual symbol in the UML is, of course, there directly implemented in the SuperCollider language. What's not there is the idea of a package, but luckily this is not essential to object-oriented programming. So when you use packages in the UML model and you go to translate that into the SuperCollider language, this is by now lost, this information into which package a class belongs. But you can overcome this problem by, for example, use prefixes for every class name, and thus somehow simulate the idea of packages. Attributes, as shown in the UML, as the second section of a rectangular class symbol, they of course can be translated to SuperCollider instance variables. Static attributes, such an idea of static variables, is also supported by SuperCollider. You can declare class variables with a star. Types are essential to some programming languages, object-oriented languages, so UML does know about types and usually requires to name types for any element that is declared. Types, on the other hand, not relevant to SuperCollider because it's that completely different approach of a typeless language. That means that you can safely ignore types when translating your UML model to SuperCollider. But you can, of course, use the information about types that you might incorporate into the model to generate comments in the code that is translated from the model, which sometimes can help to make clear which purpose an element is used for. If you comment a type like this is a number or this is a string. Yeah, methods are methods in SuperCollider, no matter whether you name that message or function, or on the other end, in the UML, there's a small distinction between the idea of a method and an operation, but generally the idea of methods is the same. Static methods, as they are used in the UML, again, are available in SuperCollider by using the class declarations with a star. Abstract methods can be easily simulated by generating a SuperCollider method that always throws an error and thus requires to be overwritten by a subclass. And relationships become variables. either single variables that point to a single referenced instance, or list variables that can contain multiple references. Yes, visibility in the UML is expressed by prefixes like plus, the tilde, the sharp sign, or minus for public, package protected, and private. And there is no direct reflection of visibility in SuperCollider, but you can somehow simulate a public visibility by at least for attributes by attaching an automatic getter and setter declarator to the variable, and this way you make the variable accessible by other classes too, and this somehow reflects the idea of a public attribute. And the other levels of visibility don't need to be represented in the UML. It's in SuperCollider. It's of course not crucial to have visibility. You can always build up an object-oriented software system without the idea of visibility, but it can make things clearer if you use that in the model. Yes. Okay. To implement this mapping, as I've just introduced, the individual elements, how they can be reflected in SuperCollider. You have different approaches depending on what tool you use. So this is dependent on the software tool that you have for developing the software. And in case of the tool used here, that Poseidon tool, you can configure the output of the generated source files with such a template language. This is actually the Velocity template language. They have incorporated the Apache Jakarta Velocity template engine into their product. And using this template language, they transform from the model to the source files. So this script-like template is run when the variables indicating with the dollar sign are pre-initialized by the values that are suggested by the model, and for each class this template is run, and then the individual class files are generated. Yeah, a medium-sized example that is that has actually made up a piece of running software is, for example, the SF Slice class library, which Hans-Holger Rutz and I have already presented on this conference. But not with focus on the UML development behind it. It looks like this. This is a more compact view on the classes. It doesn't show the attributes and the methods, but we can probably again go into the actual application. I think this is the compact view as just seen, yes. And there is a more detailed view which also shows the attributes and methods, and you can again like select. Maybe it's hard to read. I can zoom in a bit, even bigger. Select an individual method, and you see that you can edit the code below. Or you can also select the whole class, and this makes it even clearer that we generate actual SuperCollider source code from it, which we can see in the bottom now. This is done by having modified the original Java templates that came with this tool. So this is the reason, if someone has noticed this, why here it says Java, because I've just taken the original Java templates and modified them to then generate SuperCollider. But that's one official way the vendors of this tool recommend customization of the source generation. What you can see is that the green area, the area with green background, is not editable, and this is the part which is generated from the visual information as given in the model. So those relationships, for example, here, these arrows, they are in the course of creating source code from the visual model. They become these variables that we can see here. This is done by the template. And in the same way, of course, the whole skeleton of the whole class, as it's declared by placing a rectangular symbol into the diagram. This is the screenshot of this. We've seen the code too. There's another example. I've shown this before here. This is an implementation of the XML document object model, which allows parsing and creating XML files from SuperCollider, and it has also been entirely developed using this diagram-based technique. So it's one real-world example. I can zoom out here. This is one real-world example of how actually running SuperCollider software has been developed. I've already noticed this. I'm planning to migrate this whole thing to a really free UML tool. The Poseidon tool used to be available at least for free. It has never been licensed under the GPL, although it's based on a GPL tool called Argo UML. But Poseidon, although it has not been a GPL licensed tool, it has been freely available until version 4, and now they've issued version 5 and changed their licensing model, and this of course makes it necessary to look for a really free tool to do those things in the future with SuperCollider. Yeah, as a conclusion, there are two perspectives that can highlight results from this. First is that the UML and visual modeling techniques have proven to be practically useful enough to be adopted even to such a non-standard language like SuperCollider, and you can actually make running software with it on the one hand, and on the other hand, from the perspective of the SuperCollider language, the language has proven that it's a mature object-oriented language which is equipped with all necessary elements that are needed to integrate it in such a state-of-the-art visual development process. And this is what I wanted to show. Thank you very much for your attention.
Yes, thank you very much, Jens, for this talk. Are there any questions from the audience here?
Yes, hi. Frederick from Sweden. I was wondering, can you go backwards and analyze a set of SuperCollider classes and get at least a rough sketch of a UML diagram? That, for me, would be a lot more useful.
So you mean you already have some source code, and then you make a diagram from it? Yeah, this is depends on the tool you use, and if you were writing in Java, you could do this with this tool, because this tool knows how to import. Can you see the lights? I just move it a bit. This tool has some import function, and you can, if it's Java, you can import source files, and it automatically creates some diagram from it, which you usually have to fix manually. But it makes some rudimentary basic diagram from imported Java files. What's not possible with this solution now is to import SuperCollider. You know, I don't know how to change the API of this tool to also parse different languages. This template mechanism is only in one direction to generate code from the model. It would be far more work, I think. But in theory, it's of course possible. If you can do it with Java, then theoretically you could also parse SuperCollider. Yeah.
Okay.
Any further questions?
This is a more general question about UML, because I don't know UML. Is it possible to model or represent references inside methods to other methods, like to describe what other methods a method calls in order to make more clear the interconnection between methods and class, and maybe to help the to overcome some of the limitations of a typeless language that makes it sometimes very difficult to find mistakes and things like that. So is it possible to describe what's happening inside methods, or which classes they refer to and things like that?
This is the very basic question, if the UML also supports views on processes, on the dynamics of a software system. And the class diagram, as I've shown it, this particular diagram technique only gives a view on the static structure of the software system. But the reason why the UML is called unified modeling language, that unified, is because it combines several different diagram techniques. And the class diagram is the most most well-known UML diagram type. So this is what you generally refer to if you say UML diagram. You talk about a UML class diagram. But there is, in fact, there are even multiple other diagram types declared in the UML which allow to express dynamics. And I don't have an example in SuperCollider here, because the translation process to SuperCollider is also not implemented for those dynamic diagrams, but it's possible. I can... Yeah, if we have a couple of seconds time, I can give you at least an idea of how such a dynamically oriented diagram looks like. It looks pretty much different than a class diagram. Let me have a look. Maybe if we should find something here. Yeah, this is one. This is a so-called sequence diagram, which has a completely different purpose. It does not give an overview on the static structure of the whole system, but it gives a detailed view on the dynamics of the interaction between, here in this case, three classes or instances of these three classes. And it gives displays a specific situation, a specific step that is done by the application, and it shows it in detail. And you can think of the time running from top to bottom. There's also, just to add this here, as we have already loaded this, there's also an even more abstract diagram, which is called use case diagram, which shows these funny people symbols. It's just a very general view on what a system can do. Here it's the example of a car in German, but usually you would use it to describe a software system and just to name the very basic functions that a software system should have, and just to name the very basic uses for the system. So in this case, there would be two uses for the system. And computer scientists do take such diagrams seriously, although those funny people are displayed there, but it's considered to be a professional diagram technique.
Anyway. Okay, thanks for these additional insights. Are there questions from the internet audience? No, then one last question from the present audience, maybe? No, okay, then I would like to close this... did I miss something? No. I would like to close this paper session of today. Tomorrow you will see the usual moderators again. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to feel like a Linux audio conference moderator for two talks. And see you tomorrow or tonight in the concerts.
Thanks again.
And remember, summertime starts tomorrow.